Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back.
I see your stagflation. It makes complete sense. However, I think you are way ahead of the curve. I think you're seeing the future a year, maybe 18 months early.
I've been way early for a decade. I mean, I was talking about these problems a long time ago. So it's not like I'm just coming out with this. I mean, I was seeing through to the end game before the financial crisis. So it's already taken us a long time to get where we are. And we're still not at the crisis yet. But because extend and pretend for as long as we have not addressed the underlying problems. We have, you know, allowed the problems to get much, much bigger. So whatever I thought was in store for the economy a decade ago, you know, we have something much worse now because the problems were allowed to get much more severe over time rather than dealing with them when they were smaller. And of course, they weren't small a decade ago. The problems were enormous. They're just that much more enormous now. And so it's going to be that much more difficult for the economy to deal with the restructuring process.
Professor Kotlikoff completely mirrors your sentiments. He's upped his estimate of total U.S. debt, if we include obligations, from $200 trillion to $240. With rates, obviously a new lower rate cycle around the corner, policymakers are going to lower rates. And that tends to make issuing debt much more appealing to our corporations, all right? You know, the train of buybacks tends to flow across the news wires.
That's going to be another problem because when the Fed starts, you know, buying bonds, they're not buying corporate bonds, they're buying treasuries. And so even if treasury bonds are rising and rates are falling, corporate bonds could be falling and rates could be rising. I mean, I think you're going to see some horrific losses in the corporate bond market. I mean, the problem is that years and years of cheap money, a lot of corporate debt has been underpriced. I mean, the yields on junk bonds have been ridiculously low relative to higher credit quality bonds. And even, you know, lower grade corporate bonds, the yields have not really reflected the risk. And as we start to see some companies blowing up in this next recession, and not just the stockholders losing money, stockholders are going to get wiped out. Bondholders are going to be losing money. I mean, I talked about that on my recent podcast when I was talking about Tesla. Like, a lot of people want to talk about how much that stock has gone down, but look at the bonds. That company has a lot of debt, and the bonds are starting to lose value. And if the bonds are losing value, I mean, that means that the bondholders are worried that they're not going to get their money back. And if they don't get their money back, that means the stock's worth nothing. I mean, at least worth nothing to the stockholders. It has some enterprise value that would be transferred to the bondholders, but the bondholders are thinking that whatever they get in a bankruptcy will not be equal to face value of the bonds. But the point is, if we start to see some big blow-ups in the corporate bond market, that means that rates are going much, much higher for corporate debtors. Even if they go lower for the U.S. government, they're going higher for U.S. corporations. And that is going to be a huge, huge problem because that means that the companies are not going to get the benefit of the lower interest rates like they did last time if spreads are rising. And so even if treasury rates go down a little bit, corporate rates could go up a lot. And the same thing could be happening in the mortgage market. So that doesn't bode well for the housing sector.
I think that we could see, as confidence is lost, of course, in corporate debt and really just debt across the board, you could see something paralleling 2008, 2009, the Great Crisis. We're looking at potential for lower rates. Is that going to save the housing market next year?
About face that the Fed did brought mortgage rates down, and that, you know, helped the housing market a bit. I mean, it slowed down the decline, but I think we already have the worst housing market since the Great Recession right now. The numbers are pretty bad, and they're going to get worse. And I don't think it's ultimately going to help. I don't think, you know, because they're not going to get rates down below where they were last time. I don't think they're going to be able to do that on the housing market. And I do think you're going to start to see the defaults picking up again. Believe it or not, you know, there are still a lot of people that, you know, are going to not be able to make their mortgage payments. Some people still have adjustable rate mortgages that are going to reset higher than what they used to be. But, you know, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. And if you look at the statistics, I mean, already you have delinquencies in auto loans and student loans that are up to or exceed the levels of the Great Recession, and we're not even in a recession yet. So if people can't make their car payments now when they have jobs, imagine what happens when they lose those jobs, because the job losses are coming, right? Because all recessions start with low unemployment, but they end with high unemployment. So when a recession starts is when the layoffs begin, and we've got a lot of layoffs, and people who are unemployed have a hard time making their mortgage payments. And I do think there's a lot of houses that have been bought by private equity companies. There's a lot of single-family homes that have been rented out. I think a lot of these homes may end up for sale. And, you know, they don't have mortgages, so they can sell for whatever they can get. They don't have to get the permission from the bank to do a short sale. So there can be a big glut of supply on this market with a lot of houses for sale and not a lot of buyers. So there's a lot of downside risk. It's, again, this is a bigger housing bubble, I think, than what we had before, a bigger stock market bubble than what we had before. It's the biggest bond bubble we've ever had. And, of course, there's bubbles and all sorts of things. I mean, what do you expect when you keep rates at zero for as long as the Fed did? You know, one of the ironies is recently the Federal Reserve came out and they were kind of like warning that, hey, maybe there's too much corporate debt out there. Like, duh. I mean, why do you think there's all this corporate debt out there? Because of the Fed. You know, I mean, that's what the Fed wanted corporations to do. That's why the Fed was keeping rates so low, to enable corporations to keep issuing debt. And, of course, a lot of that debt was just used to buy up their own overpriced stock. It wasn't even used to make, you know, in badly needed capital investments. It was used to prop up the stock price. And this is going to, you know, work horribly on the way down, because then corporations, when they have to pay off that debt, they have to sell stock. And, you know, they're going to sell back stock at much lower prices than what they paid to buy it. And so a lot of shareholder value is going to be destroyed in the process. But, you know, people should protect themselves. They should, you know, get out of U.S. stocks, get out of U.S. bonds, get out of the dollar. Yes, it hasn't collapsed yet, but don't let that lull you into a false sense of complacency that just because it hasn't happened, it's never going to happen. Just when you least expect it, right? Expect it. I've been expecting it for a long time, but I mean, people need to do something about it. You know, they should, if you don't have an account at Euro Pacific Capital, you got to set one up. You got to get into foreign assets. You got to get into foreign currencies, get into precious metals, get into these gold stocks. These things are ridiculously low priced. I mean, nobody is worried about inflation. Nobody is worried about the dollar. And those are the things that everybody should be worried about. You know, the only people that seem to be worried are a few people who have been buying the cryptocurrencies, but you know, unfortunately, they're going to find out they jumped out of the frying pan into the fire. But, you know, enough people, real people, real money is still complacent. They're not worried. And, you know, so, you know, before they wake up and discover this, this is when people have to, you know, do something for themselves. And that's what I'm helping people do. I'm trying to get as many people off the Titanic as I can before it sinks.
Before we wrap up, you did bring up the C word, cryptos, huge proponents of cryptocurrencies. Obviously, you've got to have 10, 20% or more in precious metals, more now that equities have had such a bubble. You're worried about debt. You're worried about real estate. You're worried about shares. You're worried about the greenback. With all these concerns at Euro Pacific Capital, precious metals should be overweighted. But can't we have a 1, 2, 3% allocation across a wide spectrum of cryptos in the event of a systemic currency crisis?
Well, the currency crisis could include the cryptocurrencies. They have far more in common with fiat currencies.
But Peter, they're so non-correlated to the U.S. dollar and almost every other currency out there.
Well, the fact that they're non-correlated means that they could just fall. They could just go down when the market goes down. They're not negatively correlated. So you can buy a bunch of cryptocurrencies, and then the stock, the markets can go down, and the cryptocurrencies are just as likely to go down too. I mean, there's not any kind of protection there. But you know, I still think that the crypto bubble popped. And I think that this is a bear market rally in cryptos. We're nowhere near the old highs, so it's hard to argue that we're not in a bear market, or that the market didn't peak. We'll see. We'll see if Bitcoin can make a new high, or if any of the other cryptos can make a new high along with it. Think that the market won't go that high. I mean, I think that there's been a lot of manipulation. I think you have a lot of the whales who are doing what they can to try to move this market higher. and they're hoping that the increase in price will, you know, engender better sentiment and sucker in more money, more buyers to come in, you know, kind of like a pump and dump. They're trying to pump it up. I don't know how successful they're going to be as far as how much higher they can get it. I mean, they're moving it higher, but I don't think that there's a lot of new people adopting crypto. I mean, when you look at the search term, you can, you know, you barely saw a jump in the people searching for Bitcoin, and it's already pulled back. So, you know, there's not a lot of people around new money coming in. I think it's the same money. I think it's the same people who have been in, you know, pushing it higher. But I don't see this thing spreading widely, you know, like it was maybe at the end of 2017.
Clearly, we saw the run-up in 2017. It was epic, right? It was a 10, 20-fold run from sub-1,000 to 20,000. A huge part of that, I think you'd agree, was front-running the CME, right? As they were building up the futures, they obviously were accumulating Bitcoin and all the institutions and as you say, whales. There was a lot of interest building, and that built, and the momentum built, and it was a global phenomenon. Don't you think, though, that once, just like we saw with GLD and SLV, the Street Trex ETFs for silver and gold, as we start to see more momentum for those ETFs and the SEC finally gives the thumbs up on an Ethereum and other competing Bitcoin ETFs, that when a nation like Venezuela, Argentina, North Korea, Iran, Russia, China, when one of these countries say, hey, wait, we're going to take 0.1% of our reserves and we're going to buy some Bitcoin.
I mean, if central banks are wanting to move out of fiat currencies, if they want to diversify their dollar reserves or their euro reserves, they're going to buy gold. That's what central banks do. They're going to buy hard money. They're not just going to buy some, you know, digital crypto. I mean, you know, I mean, their central bankers are not going to do that. Speculators will do that. I mean, obviously, you know, people are betting that more people are going to buy cryptocurrencies. So I get that bet. But in the long run, there's going to be a bunch of bag holders because none of these things can work, right? And they're just going to collapse because the demand is going to go away. The demand is there now because people think the price is going to keep going up. And so greed is a powerful motivator. And people are buying these things because they think they're going to get rich. And if you try to talk any sense into them, they don't want to hear it because they don't want to admit that they're not going to be rich. I mean, it's a cognitive dissonance. But that is all that is giving any of these cryptos value, is the belief that they're going to keep on rising. And the belief that one day they're going to serve as money or as a medium of exchange or as digital gold. But none of this is actually going to happen. But that doesn't stop people from betting that it's going to happen. The price goes up, but no one knows when the price is going to fall through the floor. And it's going to happen. People aren't going to expect it. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to, you know, see their dreams and their money just evaporate.
Two or three bullet points. Venezuela is already floating their own cryptocurrencies. I think that really is the tipping point. It really sort of was the shot across the bow.
What they were talking about doing was having a cryptocurrency backed by their oil reserves. You know, there was an article the other day I read on Zero Hedge about Russia talking about launching a cryptocurrency backed by gold. Now, you know, that is different. When people talk about cryptocurrencies backed by something, or Facebook is talking about launching its own cryptocurrency, that's going to be backed by a basket of other fiat currencies, including the dollar, the euro, the yen. So when you're talking about a cryptocurrency that is backed by something, that is completely different than a cryptocurrency that is backed by nothing. If you're going to back your currency with something real, and you know, there will be people that will say, I'm going to back my cryptocurrency with a real estate portfolio, or I'm going to back it with, you know, other, you know, whatever. As long as it's backed by something tangible and real, and in fact, it doesn't even have to be tangible. You can have a cryptocurrency backed by patents or backed by royalties. You know, a singer can come out and say, hey, I'm going to back this. I'm going to back cryptocurrencies with my portfolio of music. I don't know. But, you know, there has to be something of actual value. They don't think that cryptocurrencies have to have any value. And when the argument that they make is that nothing has any value, which is the most ridiculous argument. They say, look, gold doesn't have any value. water doesn't have any value. Wheat doesn't have any value. Nothing has any value. It's all subjective. And since nothing has value, then there's no problem if Bitcoin doesn't have any value. Because it's clear that things have value. Now, people may value them. Some people may value them more than others. But to say that nothing has any value and it's all subjective is a bunch of nonsense. And, a painting, you could say, look, a painting, you know, the value of a painting, all right, yes, to some people it can have a lot of value and other people it might not have much value, but there's actually something there, you know, whether you appreciate the art or not, it's different than having something that you can't appreciate anything. I mean, Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrencies has no physical substance, but apart from that, there's nothing that you could do with it as you know, like music I can listen to. You know, it doesn't exist physically. It's a sound wave, I can dance to it. I can sing along to it. It can make me feel good, right? Those are real things. But Bitcoin doesn't do anything. I understand the technology to exchange it and all that, but you're not exchanging anything of value. The fact that you can have it secured. And, you know, maybe nobody can hack it. We'll see. You know, I mean, people believe that, you know, you can't hack into this thing. Well, I mean, you don't know how the technology is going to evolve. But even if I buy into that argument, there is nothing really substantively different between Bitcoin and 2,000 other digital currencies that exist. There's no limit to the number of digital currencies that can be created out of thin air because they have no actual value. There's nothing, you know, so you can create an infinite number of them.
We're big believers in precious metals, as you know. I would just like to leave with you like I left with your former colleague, Michael Pinto. He's a tough customer when it comes to new ideas in finance. One place I think we might be able to find some common ground, it is a far superior and more efficient way of transferring wealth. Many business transactions today, several a day, are $10 to $20, $30, $50 million or more are transferred for as little as $12. That same transaction and can take a week. Why not anticipate, at least make plans in place to think, since companies and individuals are doing it, it only makes common sense to extrapolate forward and recognize that central banks will wake up to the efficiencies of it eventually at some point.
Where I think you can make money in Bitcoin is if you trade it. I mean, it's pretty volatile as far as trading. And I don't know how long that hot potato is going to last, but clearly, it moves up and down and people can get in there and buy and sell it and make money. And they are making money. So, I mean, people could do that, but most people, you know, just buy it and they hold it and they're afraid to sell it because they're afraid of missing out, right? They think it's going to the moon. And so they're hodling. But I think the people who are making money are people who are self-trading it because there's action there. And obviously, if you're a trader, Bitcoin was almost at 3,000, and now it's almost at 9,000. So the asset has almost tripled. If you're a trader, I mean, if something tripled, you should sell it.
Let's look forward to seeing how much of this actually plays out.
Okay, bye-bye.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity, craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly, just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Many Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share, with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Many Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Many Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Many Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange, and in the US, MENEF. Remember to sign up to Many's share. shareholder club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, many jewelry. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. OneGold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. OneGold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through OneGold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, OneGold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.